Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I am Pranay and today I have with me Sarthak and Sakshi. And the three of us had brought out a strategic assessment recently, which was discussing what is up with the COVID-19 response in our neighborhood. That is what's happening in Pakistan. We are hearing a lot of news about India, even as we speak, but not much about Pakistan. So we thought we'll just do a quick assessment of the economics and politics of what's happening there. None of the three of us are epidemiologists, so we have restricted our observations to the economics and politics and not specifically about the epidemiology itself. So why Pakistan is important, first and foremost, is because in the Indian subcontinent, it already has the highest number of cases. We are already seeing that Pakistan has more than 2,000 confirmed cases today. So let's begin with this conversation and explore what's happening there. So Sakshi, you also read a few articles regarding this and you did a bit of research. So what's the current situation in Pakistan like?
So currently, like you mentioned, there are more than 2,000 cases, confirmed cases in Pakistan right now. And most of them are in the state of Punjab, followed by Sindh. And it's pretty interesting to note why Pakistan is showing the highest number of cases in the Indian subcontinent, right? Like, why isn't it India? Why isn't it Afghanistan? Stuff like that. So I think primarily there are two main reasons for this. The first, I think, unfortunately, is that Pakistan shares a border with both China and Iran. And China is where the virus started itself. And they also have a lot of trade with China, right? So there's a lot of movement of people and goods that keep crossing the border. So it's pretty inevitable that the virus spread this vastly and this fast in Pakistan.
Although one important point we need to mention here is the Pakistan PM categorically mentioned that there has not been a single case which has come from China. And I think what's more important is the other border which Pakistan shares with Iran. Isn't it, Sakshi?
Yeah, that's also true. So the border that they share with Iran is more important because I think, in fact, the first two cases that were reported in Pakistan were of Pakistani pilgrims who had gone to Iran on a pilgrimage and were coming home, right? So this was how the first cases were reported in the country. And the reason for the exponential increase in cases is because all of these pilgrims were isolated at the border, the Taftan quarantine camp. But this camp actually meant to be a sort of rest stop for these pilgrims who didn't want to stretch themselves too thin, right? It was never meant to hold these many people in that smaller space. So it was sort of inevitable that the virus spread this fast because, you know, too many people in such a small space, the facilities weren't that great. The bathrooms, there were not enough bathrooms, not enough water, shortage of food. So it was a very conducive environment for the virus to spread. And also, we've been getting reports of how people are breaking out of these quarantine facilities because of the lack of amenities. So even if they don't have the virus, they're probably transmitting it to other people, the carriers. So it's been quite a messy situation right now. But that's how it started. That's the current situation in Pakistan.
So this also points to the fact that Pakistan also has a low state capacity. So they are having these quarantine facilities, or they're trying to make these quarantine facilities, but they are not working. Or the basic amenities that should have been there were not there. The Sukur facilities, quarantine facility, there were patients who were admitted over there. They also broke out. On top of that, look at Pakistan's economic situation. For the last 2 years, they have not been doing well. There is a revenue shortfall. There has been increase in expenditures. So already you are having... Already there were some estimates that the GDP growth rate will be low. It is going to go down further. So low state capacity, as well as the pilgrims from Iran, the Shia pilgrims from Iran who are returning from Iran, they have been the main reasons why Pakistan has had this pandemic outbreak. Another thing to be noted here is, at present, the majority of the cases are from people who have returned from abroad. The local transmission rates are quite low. 2 days back, there was one statement made by an authority in Pakistan that 27% of the cases are from local transmission, or else all the cases are from abroad. And here, Imran Khan reiterates, not only Imran Khan, the advisor to the Prime Minister also has been reiterating that none of the cases have been from China, or most of the cases have been from other towns.
Right. So I think that was the beginning of it. So a lot of people coming back from Iran, which was one of the epicenters. But now Pakistan has already transitioned to stage two or stage three rather. And there is instance of community transmission also. So in that respect, Pakistan's situation is similar to India. And like India, even the state capacity there is quite low. So let's explore some of the similarities and differences in the response itself, right? So for example, one thing which is common between the two places is the lack of state capacity. So a lot of these spreads are happening because not enough testing is being done. So, for example, up till March 26, I saw that only 6,449 tests had been done in Pakistan. So, given that these tests are not happening, most likely the number of cases currently that we see is a huge underestimate as well. The second thing that we see is the role of state governments and how the response of various actors has been. So let's discuss that. Sarthak, what has been the response given this outbreak, right?
Yeah, so if you look at the response, again, we have to divide it into different actors who are playing what kind of role. So first of all, we have the federal government. The federal government has some role at the domestic levels as well as the international. So at the domestic levels, we have the National Institute of Health in Pakistan, which is coordinating all the efforts, which gives you the daily updates, the number of cases, the number of people who have died, number of people who are being tested. So it is doing that.
Just to add that NIH is a body of their Ministry of Health. So it is functioning under the aegis of the ministry.
Under the aegis of the federal government. So apart from that, they have set up a core emergency committee to address this pandemic, and which includes health officials as well as the army. Then they have set up a national action plan, which again has different objectives ranging from short term to long term. In the short term, they are looking at addressing the present issue. In the long term, they want to create health systems which will be resilient to these kind of problems. Also, National Disaster Management Authority has been invoked, and the national NDMA is basically trying to coordinate with the provincial governments. And apart from all these things, they have also introduced an economic stimulus package. We'll come to that in a while. So these are the efforts that are going on at the domestic level. Apart from that, international level also, they are trying to ramp up their efforts. The president of Pakistan visited China recently, and he became the first head of a state to visit China after the coronavirus outbreak.
So, Sarthak, before you go into President Alvi's visit to China, I just want to go back on the domestic federal efforts. I think one major difference between the Indian response and the Pakistani response has been that they haven't yet called down for a full economic lockdown. And Imran Khan, for example, has been against an economic lockdown from a long time. So he came on TV many times and said that, you know, the lockdown will be more harmful to people with low incomes, etc. So he's been not very sure-footed about ensuring a lockdown. Although, even though that's been the federal government's stance, the provincial governments did that anyways, right? And then there was support from the Pakistan army also about that lockdown. So could you talk about that difference in approaches and what's happening regarding lockdowns there?
Yeah, definitely. So Imran Khan has again and again reiterated that Pakistan cannot afford a countrywide lockdown, and specifically mentioned that maybe European countries can afford that, maybe parts of US can afford that, but a country which is having this high levels of poverty, it will be difficult for it to implement. And it is not only Imran Khan, the special advisor to the Prime Minister has also said the same thing. But despite all these things, we see different provincial governments imposing lockdowns. In some places, it has been complete lockdown. In some places, they have had partial lockdowns. But one thing has to be noted, all these provincial governments have been under the army. And the armed forces has assured that they are going to support them in this. Also, provincial governments have tried to impose a lockdown, but they have not been completely successful. There are so many media reports, you will find that people are breaking these lockdowns. People are out on the streets. There have been allegations of hoarding, black marketing. So that is also happening, because this also points to the fact that they have low state capacity, which is not helping them enforce these things.
One more point. It's just when the Prime Minister addressed the nation, he said he was pretty against a complete lockdown, right? He said it wouldn't work. One is, I think, economically as well, they won't be able to handle it. But I think the second more important aspect is that the people's reaction to a complete lockdown. We've gotten so many reports about how a lot of religious institutions were shut, right? Because they don't want a large congregation of people. But a lot of people broke this rule as well. So many of them went to mosques for like Friday evening prayers, despite warnings of the spread of coronavirus. And a situation similar to the one that happened in India at the Nizamuddin Dargah was something that happened in Pakistan as well. So a lot of foreigners had attended an event at a mosque, and majority of them tested positive, right? And they went back home, they went out to pick up groceries and stuff like that. So inevitably, they spread that virus across as well.
Yeah, so what you're referring to is actually the Tablighi Jamaat Ijtima, yes, which happens in Raivind. So exactly. Raivind is a city and where the yearly Ijtima happens. And in fact, yesterday there were reports that 27 out of the 33 preachers in the Tablighi Jamaat Markaz were all found to be positive for COVID-19. So there is the city has been closed down for the next 3 days, but there is a lot of fear that a lot of people would have contracted this and they would have spread it to others. So that might be a super spreader event that people are very cautious of.
Correct, yeah.
Going back to the domestic efforts, Sarthak, you were mentioning about an economic relief package. So could you walk us through that? What's exactly in that package? What's happening there?
Yeah, so they have announced an economic stimulus package of around 1,250 billion rupees. And here again, there are two components. First component is related to the frontline workers. For example, those who are in the National Disaster Management Authority and so for getting medical equipments for the frontline medical workers. Apart from that, you have some sort of compensation for laborers who are going to lose out on jobs. Also, they are making some provisions for procurement of wheat from farmers. There is also a provision for income support for the next few months. Also, they have increased the amount of income support. So they are reducing the taxes on different petroleum products, gas and other utilities. Bills can be paid, can be delayed. So for all these things, they have created a package, around 1250 billion rupees package. But one thing has to be noted, we could not find much details how they are going to mobilize resources to provide for all these things. So that is something I'm not sure how they're going to do.
The interesting thing was about the petroleum prices as well. In India, we've seen the response that the excise duty on petrol and diesel has in fact been increased. But in Pakistan, we are seeing an opposite response. They have reduced the taxes and reduced the prices. So there's an attempt to stimulate demand at this moment. And I think that happens because Pakistan is in a very precarious economic situation. The situation in India is far better. So the response there has been that they cannot afford lockdown or a complete lockdown. And that's why some of these measures to stimulate demand, even as they want to stop the spread of the virus.
Another thing too about how they're going to mobilize these funds was an article that I read about how a lot of ministers in the government, including the opposition party, actually, they're willing to forego maybe, I think, 2 or 3 days of their salary and contribute it to the fund. So that's just one of the ways I think that they're collecting a lot of money for the emergency bailout package.
Yeah, it will be an infinitesimally small number for a country of Pakistan's scale and size. So it's just like in India, you have these MPLADS funds being put into PM CARES, right? But that's not a big sum anyways.
We can actually look at their international efforts because they're trying to raise money from World Bank, Asian Development Bank. Maybe they're going to use these resources to fund the stimulus package. For example, from the World Bank, they're trying to get $200 million from the Development Bank, around $50 billion. They're also trying to increase engagement with other partners. So maybe that is one way by which they can do it.
Yeah. Sardag, and there was a China angle here as well, right? You were talking about how their president visited China amidst the coronavirus spread in China itself. So just talk us through that, please.
Yeah. So President Alvi of Pakistan became the first head of the state to visit China after the pandemic outbreak. And this visit also, Premier assured that they will be getting support, and he used the term ironclad friendship for the equations between Pakistan and China. And apart from this, you also find that the Khunjareb border, China-Pakistan border, at the point Khunjareb, it remains closed at this point of time. But it was also opened for one day to allow for different medical equipments to come from China to Pakistan. China has been handing out aid. In fact, last 2 days also, we have seen Pakistan getting aid from China. Also, some international organizations based out of China, for example, Huawei or Foundation, Alibaba Foundation, they have been supporting Pakistan.
Yeah, so basically there is an outreach from the Chinese government and Chinese private players as well in order to help Pakistan in this response. What's ironical is initially when the outbreak was just about beginning in Pakistan, there was a huge export of masks and some protective equipment from Pakistan to China. And soon after, the situation broke out in Pakistan as well. And then there were calls that, hey, you've sent all these things to China, please get it back, and we are now in need. So, and now we see a reverse flow happening, and Jack Ma Foundation, Alibaba Foundation, etc., bringing in some supplies to Karachi recently. So that's what happened between China and Pakistan. I think it is very important for China to see that Pakistan comes out through this crisis, because they have invested a lot of funds in CPEC, and that's their poster boy for the Belt and Road Initiative as well. So it's important for them to see Pakistan get over this. So I expect them to invest more funds into Pakistan in the times going ahead. All right, so that was about the international efforts. Let's get back to, when we are talking about Pakistan, we have to also talk about the Pakistani military jihadi complex. So, Sarthak, what's the Pakistani army being up to?
So, Pakistani army has been up to multiple things, actually. It has been into multiple domains. So, first of all, the Pakistan, there have been statements from the Pakistan army chief as well, that they are prepared for any extreme emergency. And they are providing facilities. In fact, the central testing lab is at the Army Armed Forces Institute of Technology in Rawalpindi. They are also researching and manufacturing face masks, sanitizers. The medical plan of action has also been prepared with the supervision of the armed forces. They are also creating different quarantine facilities, different field hospitals have been also set up by them. And as we already saw, Army is helping in enforcing lockdown at the provincial levels. So, Army's role has been quite significant in all the different aspects.
Yeah, and the DGISPR made a statement immediately after the provincial governments declared a lockdown, which was taken quite well by a lot of people in Pakistan, saying that, you know, the army is getting back. So, we have to see this in the context of the political framework of Pakistan. The Pakistani army always takes the benefits and passes on the blame to other institutions. So even in this case, it will try to project itself as the body which will take Pakistan out of the crisis. And if something bad happens, it will be the responsibility of the civilian government. So you can already see this sort of a conflict playing out even as they try to get out of this crisis. Right. So next, we should discuss the role of provincial governments, Sarthak. Just like in India, the role of provincial governments has been significant in this. So what's going on there?
So as Sakshi pointed out, the majority of the cases have been in Punjab right now. In the last few days, the number of cases in Punjab has increased drastically. So it was the Sindh government initially who led the efforts, and now at all the different provinces have also pitched in. So most of the provinces initially declared lockdowns. Also, the different advisories were sent out by them. Also, these state provincial governments, they have created their own funds for addressing this issue. For example, Sindh has set up a fund. 3 billion rupees. Recently, Punjab province created a 10 billion package for daily wage earners. KP province has also been doing that. So, forcing lockdowns, advisories, and creating funds, this has been the major thing. Apart from that, they have also restricted inter-provincial transports so that, again, transmission of diseases from one province to another can be stopped.
Sarthak, also, what about the health infrastructure there? Just like health is actually a state subject in India, what about in Pakistan?
In Pakistan, again, health is primarily the responsibility of the provincial governments. But when it comes to public health, I mean, which involves externality, it is under the domain of the federal government. And this is something which happened after the 2011 constitutional amendment. So public health is the responsibility of the federal government. And we have already seen how National Institute of Health and these agencies are playing a role. Apart from that, for the primary, secondary and tertiary healthcare, this is the responsibility of the provincial governments. But one thing has to be noted here, that the healthcare situation is not that good. The infrastructure is not up to the mark. And this is something you will find from media reports. One example here is, in the Sindh province, they had sufficient testing facilities, but they did not have sufficient human resources to use those testing facilities. In many places, isolation wards are not there. At present, some 35 isolation wards have been created all over Pakistan, but still, it is way less than what is required. Many places also do not have protective equipments. So, healthcare infrastructure is something which is lacking, and they have been trying to import it.
Yeah, I found something really interesting as well regarding similarities between India and Pakistan and their health infrastructure is the initiative that was led by the Indian Railways to convert the coaches into isolation wards was something that was implemented in Pakistan as well, with the Pakistan Railways also converting a lot of their trains and their coaches into isolation wards, I think sort of copying what the Indian Railways had done. So that's how they also increased their sort of their quarantine facilities and isolation capacities. So that was another interesting similarity that I found.
Right. So that's a work in progress, which is happening there.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is also something that I also found out in the last couple of days. They're also doing the same thing and they're also doing it.
All right. So this is all about what the various institutions are doing in Pakistan. Now let's get to the economic and political impact. Where do we see this going in Pakistan? Sarthak, what do you think?
So when it comes to economic impact, there is going to be an economic impact. Already Pakistan was not doing well. And this particular pandemic outbreak is going to, again, make a major dent. Different estimates are there. Some say it is going to impact them by around $5 billion. Some are saying it is going to impact them by $10 billion. But whatever be the case, it is going to have a major impact. And across sectors, they are going to get impacted by it. And in such a scenario, they would require cooperation specifically from international partners, from international organizations. So finding international partners at this point of time will be difficult. Saudi is one of those reliable partners, but they themselves are impacted and the oil prices have crashed. So their source of income is also somewhere patchy.
Yeah, just to go back on that, you know, the traditional supporters of the Pakistani military jihadi complex have been the US, Saudi Arabia and China. In this case, the US and Pakistan decoupling has already going on for quite some time. So they can't be expected to pitch in a lot. And especially because US is dealing with the mess in its home turf now. The second is, as you said, Saudi Arabia, but they are also under a lot of financial strain and they are also trying to change their own economy. So the third player, which is remaining and which has interest in trying to help Pakistan, is China. So I see them doing a lot more together as a result of this outbreak.
And also one thing, as narrative shapes up against China internationally. So China is also going to require partners, and so they are going to build up their they're going to build up on all these things.
Right.
So this is the first dimension. Apart from that, it might take help of international organizations, but since it is a pandemic and more than 170 countries are affected, so all these countries will require support from international organizations. So these organizations also won't have that much fiscal breathing space so as to provide Pakistan with sufficient amount of funds. So that is also going to be a challenge for them.
Right. And I think there will also be impact on their exports. So for example, a large part of Pakistan exports is through textiles, and it is likely to get hurt. So because all supply chains have dropped. So for example, the Ministry of Commerce said that they fear a $2 to $4 billion export loss due to coronavirus. So that will hurt their economy even more.
Yes, definitely.
Right. What about the political impacts?
Before we get into that, I think one point that all of us missed was about how it's gonna result in a lot of job losses and layoffs, because a majority of the manpower in Pakistan are actually daily wage workers, right? And I think it's estimated that about 60% of them are going to be laid off, with, I think, the agricultural industry and the manufacturing industry, the retail industry, transport, hospitality, all of them are going to be very hard hit. And so it's going to create a lot of void in manpower in Pakistan once this blows over.
Right. So I think this number refers to the study which was done by Pakistan Institute of Development Economics.
Right.
And they said that around 60% of the vulnerably employed could be laid off if Pakistan opts for a complete lockdown, which they have tried to resist. So it's not a complete lockdown yet. But yes, there will be significant losses, especially to people in the informal sector.
No, I'm just saying that the same study that you're talking about that was done by the three economists. So in their study, they classified the stages of the Pakistan pandemic, right? So the first one was not that many restrictions. The second one was limited restrictions. The third one was like a complete lockdown. So they said that Pakistan at this point is somewhere between stage two and stage three. So it would be around 50 to 60% layoff at whatever stage they're in.
Thanks. So now let's get to the political side. Sarthak, what will happen on that front?
Yeah, see, we have already seen army playing a major role, and also provincial governments taking the help of army and army pitching in. And also we have to keep in mind that the federal government had been against the lockdown. As army's role starts increasing, so this will be lending credibility to the armed forces. As a result of which, the equations that exist between the civilian government and the armed forces, which is some pain, will again move in the direction towards the armed forces. Also, the equation between the federal government and the provincial governments, okay, that can also be impacted by it. Also, if you look at the sectarian issues that exist in the Pakistani society, as the initial cases were from Iran, those pilgrims, Shia pilgrims who visited Iran and they returned. So there can be a blame game. The Shias might be blamed for it. In the last few days, we have also seen how three officials from the Balochistan government, top officials, have referred to this particular virus, coronavirus, as Hazara virus. And they have blamed Shias for bringing this virus. So there is a likelihood of this turning into sectarian conflict between the Shias and the Sunnis.
Right. Although we hope so, that doesn't happen. But there is a likelihood that, you know, there will be some strains because of the initial source of the virus coming in from Iran, right? So that is about the political impact. So basically, we see more strains between first the provincial and the federal government. And also, we will see that the Pakistan armed forces will try to project itself as the savior, and whatever ifs happen will be passed on to the federal government. So that looks like what is going to happen in the days to come. So in any case, this plays And this, so the situation in Pakistan needs a close watch, because there are already 2,000 cases and the situation is expected to get even worse as the days pass. So that's what we are trying to keep a watch on.
Similar train of thought is that as I think the situation worsens in Pakistan, and since a lot of supply routes, etc., are shut, I think by default, they're going to start leaning on their geographical neighbors, right? So that would also put a lot of pressure to probably India. But I don't know if we have the capacity to help a neighboring country right now in a situation like this. So that will be another interesting scenario that plays out.
Yeah, not so much on India, because we'll still be, the borders are quietly, are closed, and the borders are... Yeah, and they are also very closely monitored. So the situation on India, is the linkage is not very strong. But yes, it would be, currently the Afghanistan-Pakistan border has been closed by Pakistan, fearing more influx of cases from Afghanistan. So there might be some things there. And it will be interesting to actually see what happens between China and Pakistan now. The Kunjareb Pass was supposed to open on 1st April. So it will would have opened by the time this podcast comes up. So there will be some things between China and Pakistan. Are people allowed to go out, come in? That is something that we need to keep a watch on. All right, so that's all for we had for today, and we'll link our strategic assessment in the podcast description. Please go through it and let us know if you have any thoughts. That's all. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.